Hey, this is Ryan Thomas. Thanks so much for listening to On the Road and supporting Faith Radio. You are just the very best, and we appreciate you so much. Enjoy the show.
Discovering stories of courage, determination, and hope. Welcome to Faith Radio's On the Road. Now, here's Ryan Thomas.
Well, hers is a story beginning in a childhood of heartbreak, of abuse and neglect, but full of extraordinary perseverance and a faith that would not be overcome. An incredible journey of leaving behind unimaginable pain to become Miss California and a protector and an advocate for vulnerable children. Today on the road, we meet Christina Meredith, a powerful speaker and the author of the riveting new book, Cinder Girl, My Journey Out of the Ashes to a Life of Hope. It is just a real honor to have you here, Christina. How is this day treating you so far?
Oh, this day is good. I had army training this morning and doing some homework and getting these interviews done and just plowing away.
Well, it's pretty incredible. We'll talk more about, you know, just the day in the life in a little bit, but you're going to school right now. You're doing your advocacy. You're doing your speaking. You're doing your book tour, and you have a military career as well. I mean, you keeping all those plates spinning? That's pretty impressive.
You know, it's time management is key, and having a task list, an hourly task list for each day, and you know, praying that the Lord gives me the strength.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, you use that classic phrase, Cinder Girl, right in the title of the book from the fairy tale. And I mean, wow, it is really quite apt for the heartbreak that you faced growing up. For years, I mean, you were really functioning as a family servant, right? What did that look like?
Yeah, so my mother kind of picked me out as a baby and as a toddler, and it just got worse and worse and worse as I got older. And, you know, she sold me out as the ostracized one, as the unwanted one, as the different one. And she gave me my first chore duty when I was 7 to do laundry, and my new name was Laundry Lady, and she demanded that my siblings call me that. And I think at first it was supposed to be a joke, but it didn't stay as a joke, and the names grew worse, and the chore list got longer, and the, you know, not being able to play with my siblings and not being able to go outside and not being able to have friends. And I mean, it just all escalated over time. And, you know, by the time I was 10, 11 years old, I hadn't heard my name in years and was in charge of all the chores and wasn't allowed to eat at the same time with my family. And, you know, it was a different life. I had a different life than everyone else in the household. You know, so I think growing up that way taught me to appreciate, you know, true love and relationship.
One of the questions that just reading the story, I couldn't help but ponder, and then you really do kind of address it in the book itself, is do you have any idea why your mom singled you out that way?
I've done years of therapy, trauma therapy, which I'm a huge proponent for. If you've been traumatized or abused or experienced some type of loss, you need to be in trauma therapy until you find wholeness and heal from that. But I think my mother, you know, she grew up in abuse and she never took the time and the effort and the initiative to heal from that. And when she saw me, the only child to look like her, I mean, my father was a full-blooded Italian, so my siblings, all of them, all 7 of them, because there was 8 of us, all dark hair, dark skin, dark eyes. And then I come out and I'm this fair-skinned, towhead blonde, blue-eyed baby. And, you know, my mother just looked at me and saw herself. And I think she just projected all of her unhealed trauma and pain onto me. So that's why, you know, I'm a huge advocate for trauma therapy, especially for abused children and foster care children. That should be mandatory to end the cycle of poverty and abuse, to really heal and not be adults who project and adults who are wounded so they hurt children.
There is just so much that breaks your heart in the opening pages of this story. One of the the singular moments that you share has got to be when you tell your mom about the abuse that you've been suffering for so long mm-hmm. from your uncle, and she punishes you. Can you take us mm-hmm. through that?
That was a really dark moment. I was terrified to tell her because she never liked me, but I had for some reason thought in that moment she would comfort me. I don't know why, I just thought she would, but it was the antithesis of comfort. I literally got beat to a pulp that moment, and then a day later taken out of school, and then a few days later locked in a closet for several days at a time. All the while she telling me that I asked for it, that I wanted him to rape me, that it was my fault. I mean, I'm 13 years old and I'm just like so confused, and I'm crying, and the shame is crippling, and I'm just a mess. And I think, you know, as an adult now, as an adult woman, I couldn't imagine looking at a 13-year-old. I mean, do you know a 13-year-old? I think about this. I'm like, how could she even say that or do that? And, you know, I go back to what I said earlier, you know, people who have been abused or have unhealed wounds are abusers, you know, and if you don't intentionally work out your own abuse and trauma and issue, then you can project that and you can become an abuser yourself. Now, I'm not saying that people who've been abused are all abusers, but I am saying people who haven't dealt with their issues can tend to be emotionally abusive or physically abusive or verbally abusive. And that's why I've worked so hard, intensely for years and years and years to make sure that I am a whole person, loving and kind and gracious, and that there's no abusive tendency in me because I do not want to be anything like my mother. And I was 10 years old, I remember telling myself, I will be nothing like her. I will be kind. I will be loving. I will have a healthy family. And, you know, the Lord has helped me walk through that and stay true to that. And I'm very thankful, but it takes effort.
It's amazing just how self-aware you were at many points, just going through some of the most heartbreaking things imaginable. But if you're tuning in today and listening to the beginning of this story, a story that moves from heartbreak to such incredible hope, Christina Meredith is with us. She's a powerful speaker, a foster care advocate, and the author of the quite extraordinary new book, Cinder Girl, My Journey Out of the Ashes to a Life of Hope. So you go into foster care then at the age of 16, and what was the final catalyst for that? And were you hopeful then at that point that things would change as a result?
Yeah, I think the catalyst was my ROTC teachers. They knew that I was being abused. I mean, I was coming to school with tattered clothes, and I was exhausted all the time, and I had, you know, obvious signs of abuse on me and neglect. They were feeding me lunch every day. You know, I was more quiet and more reserved and recluse. You know, I was essentially just going through the motions because I was so emotionally and physically exhausted from home life. And, you know, I had been previously, when I was not with my mother, I was with a different home, that she farmed us out to. I was excelling. I was making first place in competitions in, you know, running and push-ups and sit-ups and rifle and, you know, drill and all the things that we were competing in. I was excelling extraordinarily. And I was doing semi-okay in my classes. I still struggled with, you know, academics, and I still needed extra tutoring and help, but I was doing great. And then the next semester, my freshman year, I was back with my mother, and it all, such a stark difference that they noticed. And by the time my sophomore year, my first semester of my sophomore year, they were working on a plan to get me out alive anyways, because I wasn't going to make it much longer. I was so tormented. So my ROTC instructors, who were like fathers to me, really saved my life.
Well, that's something I really wanted to pick up on, because you talk about this discovering the ROTC program. This really seems like it's one of those hinge points, these really just huge moments in your life. It was a tremendous impact to you.
Oh, I mean, ROTC was everything to me. I credit that, besides the grace of the Lord and his kindness, to saving my life. I mean, if I didn't have ROTC, I would have, who knows what unimaginable horrors I could have been caught up in. I mean, I've never done drugs to this day. I never slept around. I've never been addicted to anything. I mean, praise the Lord Jesus. And I credit that because of the purpose and the structure and the discipline and the camaraderie that ROTC gave me when I was going through some of the worst moments of my life.
This next really series of moments in your life, this next season of your life, you make another one of these extraordinary declarations. I think it's just, you're so self-aware going through what you went through. You really looked at graduating from high school as a life or death situation. Can you explain what you meant?
Oh yeah. I knew that I was different, even though it was painful, and I wanted to be normal, and I wanted to be like everyone else, and I wanted to go home to parents, and I just wanted to be a normal teenager. I knew that that was not in the cards for me. And so when other kids were going out to parties or planning what college they were going to, or, you know, doing all the normal stuff or getting ready for prom, I was working two shifts at Smoothie King or Village Inn and trying to figure out which bill to pay. And so I knew that if I didn't graduate high school, I would end up like my mother said, you know, I knew that was my only, that's all I had. And so I worked tirelessly to finish my senior year and to graduate. And by golly, I did. I walked with, I didn't have enough money to purchase my senior photos, but I walked across that stage.
Wow.
And, you know, I didn't go to prom, but I walked across that stage. And so, I mean, I just knew that no one was coming to save me in the middle of the night if I did something stupid. And I had that awareness because no one ever did come in the middle. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just knew I was on my own.
You were actually, at that point, then you were even living in your car for an extended period at that point, right?
Yeah, so the second semester of my senior year, and a little towards the end of my first semester, I was couch surfing from friend to friend when I aged out at 18. And then after I graduated high school, I ended up moving in my car and lived there for over a year. And I was a good girl, dealt the bad hand. I mean, still, I read my Bible every day when I was homeless, and I worked my jobs, and I prayed, and I went to church, and I spent a lot of time with other homeless people, sharing Chick-fil-A on the side of the road, and, you know, I just believed and wrote down promises and wrote down dreams and wrote down goals. And I refused to, I mean, of course I had bad days where I would weep and I would weep and I would be so confused and bitter and angry, but you know, the Lord always gave me this refreshing hope and beautiful dreams. And, you know, I clung to those dreams. I clung to my future and I clung to what I had, literal dreams, like actual dreams. And I cleaved to those through that trying time. And here we are, you know, 12 years later, and majority of the dreams that I had have come true, and the ones that haven't will.
it's extraordinary. And I want to ask you about that faith here in just a moment, but Christina Meredith is with us on the road today. She's a powerful speaker. I don't need to tell you that if you've been listening, a foster care advocate, the author of the quite extraordinary new book, Cinder Girl, My Journey Out of the Ashes to a Life of Hope. There's so many amazing things in the book, but perhaps the most amazing to me, just reading it and taking it all in, through everything we've just talked about and everything you've just detailed, you knew that God loved you through all of it.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you express that to people who just sort of stare at you slack-jawed, as I would be if you could see my face at this moment?
Because his love is enduring, and his love is faithful, and his kindness is never ending. And he is the living God, the great I am. And he loves me, and he has chosen me and appointed me and formed me in my mother's womb. And I could care less what this world says about me or what this world puts me through or what I endure in this world. They can't take that away from me ever. Period.
That'll preach right there. That'll work right there. Wow.
I mean, I have been with nothing, I have lived equivalent to a Joseph and Job life, so to speak. And through all of it, the Lord has been faithful to me. I don't care what anyone says. I know he is with me and has been with me and will continue to be with me. My entire life is centered around Jesus because he is the Lord of my life, and I've surrendered to his lordship. And he orders my steps and he goes before me and he clears the path and he makes the way. And I trust him and I trust he's going to continue to do that just like he did when I was in those seasons of suffering. And suffering doesn't end. I mean, just because I've published a book and I'm speaking and, you know, I'm, you know, serving the Army and about to be commissioned and all these wonderful things and about to graduate college, finally, thank God. I mean, life is still hard. There's still suffering. There's still heartache. There's still an immense need for me to rely on the Lord every second of every day. And so I think, you know, cleaving to him in times of sorrow has strengthened me to remember the truth in times that aren't so sorrowful, if that makes sense.
It does. Yeah, it really does. Well, within just a few years, it really does feel fast. I'm sure it hasn't necessarily felt that way for you, but your life your life transforms, really, as you said, beyond your wildest hopes. How do things begin to change? How did that change begin to happen? And then what led you to the Miss California organization?
You know, things changed for me over time, over long periods of continuing to work and continue to believe in my dreams and continue to press in. And the Lord just opened up doors slowly. The first door was Miss California. I mean, I was approached at Whole Foods. Someone came up to me and told me I should compete. And I laughed. I was like, this is some joke, right? You know me? I mean, I literally had spitting contests with my first sergeant all 4 years of high school. I mean, that's what I'm a military brat. Like it's just funny. It's comical. And so I threw the card in my bag and I went about my business. And then that night I was like, well, wait a minute, Chris, maybe you should look that up. And I was like, oh, okay, maybe I should. And so curiosity got me and I looked it up and I was like, this could really help me write my book and start my foundation and reform foster care and all the things that are on my goal list, right? My list of dreams. And, I was like, you know what? I'm going to give this a college try because I feel like I should. And so I did. And, you know, it turned out okay because I won. And, and you know, it opened up more doors for me. And, you know, that was 6 years ago. And here we are 6 years later, and I just published my first book, and I'm launching the Christina Merritt Foundation, and I'm a huge advocate and working endlessly to reform foster care and speaking throughout the country and sharing truths about trauma healing and PTSD and foster care awareness and, you know, all the things. And, you know, it's just years and years and years of never quitting, especially in the face of failure. I mean, I can't tell you how many people rejected me from my book and told me, no, this book is not good. No one's going to read this. Well, the devil is a liar, you know? So I just went about my business and kept submitting my book proposal. And eventually the Lord lined it up to where my mentors are some of the most successful people in the country. And it's just crazy that they're mentoring me. but they linked me up with, you know, the right people to get this accomplished. And again, it's, if God's given you a dream, he's given you a purpose and a task, which he has, by the way, if you're alive on this earth, then you have to go with it full speed ahead without wavering until the mission is accomplished. And that's, you know, my mission isn't accomplished yet. I've got a few decades left for that to be done. So,
such a great word. She's a powerful speaker, a foster care advocate, the author of the extraordinary new book, Cinder Girl, My Journey Out of the Ashes to a Life of Hope. Christina Meredith joins us on the road today. I was able to watch an interview that you had done with the great folks over at Life Today, and you said something in the web exclusive interview that's really struck me. You said the words, "I am credible because of my suffering." Can you explore that just a little bit? Because that's a pretty tough but very profound truth in a way.
I guess I get a little riled up when I hear people talk about, you know, the promises of God, or they try to talk about heartache and tell me how to endure suffering when they themselves haven't endured anything. And so, you know, I've come to a place where I don't resent people who do this, but it just it's kind of a little infuriating. Like, okay, you can't tell me how to endure suffering well if you've never suffered. Okay, guy, like, block it up. But here am I, and the Lord has allowed me to suffer in every way, I mean, I was physically ill too for years. I don't talk about that in my book, but physically ill in the hospital. No one knew what was wrong with me. Thank God I'm fully well now. But I mean, I have experienced every suffering. And so I am credible to tell people, you need to suffer well. You need to suffer well, and you need to learn. You need to learn to suffer well because it's to your benefit. It's to your calling. It's to your obligation. So you were, there's something in you chiseled that the world can't take away. Right?
Wow.
So I say that in all humility, but I say that in all confidence because I am credible because of my suffering. I can say to someone who's endured rape or violence or loss or physical sickness and illness or, you know, abandonment or rejection or anything, self-harming, whatever the grief, the trauma, the torment that is hurting them, I can speak to that. And I can bring hope and encouragement and offer a true word because I can empathize with that suffering. And I think that's for all people. I think that's why, I think what we should do with our suffering is encourage others who are suffering in that moment, right? And it shouldn't be wasted.
Yeah.
So, I say that only because in our culture, I just see this kind of, self-talk about how to endure suffering from people who really have no idea what suffering is about. And it's a little, it makes me giggle like, okay, guy, well, why don't we talk to someone, who really gets suffering? Matt Chandler. He's one of my favorite pastors to listen to. He gets suffering. Mm-hmm. And, cause he's endured some things that chisel out of you a type of humility, that wouldn't be there if you hadn't suffered. So, if you're looking to someone to listen to, you need to listen to Matt Chandler. He knows what's up.
That's a great word. Thank you for that. Wow. There's so much here. We have just a few moments left with Christina Meredith. And before we do anything else, I'm imagining available wherever fine books are sold is not too much of an mm-hmm. exaggeration, but if we do want to go out there and start really learning more about your ministry and grab a copy of the book, where should we start?
Oh, well, you can go to ChristinaMeredith.org and all of the, just click on the Cindergirl tab and all the books are there. But I mean, you can get it at Amazon, Target, books, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, Christian bookstore, iTunes, Audible. I mean, you name your favorite bookstore and it's mm-hmm. there. So, I appreciate people purchasing my book and helping me, fight the cause and encouraging me and supporting me in my mission, because it takes a team for me to get to a mission accomplished. So I really am grateful.
There are so many, and just a couple minutes here remaining with Christina. There are so many different things that I would love to ask you about. But by the way, one of those issues would be your advocacy for the children of foster care. Mm-hmm. And she's written a great piece on foxnews.com about that very thing, if you look for Christina Meredith there. But, I think maybe just in closing, one of the most hopeful things that I've heard you say, you talked about the cliche, purpose for your pain, mm-hmm. saying, really, that's a real thing. There is a mm-hmm. purpose for your pain. Jesus sees the whole story from A to Z. Maybe somebody who has been in a similar situation to you, who's gone through that, maybe just some hope to end with, that is not a cliche. That is really the truth.
Yeah, I appreciate you bringing that up because we kind of do shrug that off like, whatever. But really, there is a true purpose for the hardship and suffering and agony that you have experienced and or experiencing. And if you take a step back and you sit down and you look to God, the living God, the great I am, who makes all things new, who has good plans for you, who knows every hair in your head, who formed you in your mother's womb, who loves you, who cares for you, and who will never leave you or forsake you, reach out to him, right? He has a perfect plan for your life. He will never abandon you. He will never, your suffering is not for nothing. It will be utilized for something. You just have to get to the place where you're allowing the Lord to do something in your heart and in your mind to where you can use it when you're ready. Now, of course, if you're experiencing hardship in this moment, it's not the right time. You need to grieve. Grieving is healthy. Grieving is normal. Grieving is good. Experience where you are. The experience that you are right now, just let that be. And then over time, you get to a place where you can go, okay, God, I see what you did there. Let me go ahead and tap into that hardship and use it to the benefit of others. And so, you know, I think if you're past the place of where you're really grieving something, you should look into how does God want me to use this to help others? And if you're in a place of hardship, really just allow God to comfort you in this moment and really just be aware that he's with you and he's for you. And I think that knowing that the God of the universe is on your side can really bring hope into a dark place because it's true. Mm. And that's what I would say to people.
It is an extraordinary story told in an extraordinary new book called Cinder Girl, My Journey Out of the Ashes to a Life of Hope. Christina Meredith, the powerful speaker, a foster care advocate, and the author of this book. What an incredible time it has been, Christina. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you for telling the story.
Oh, thank you for having me. You know, it's really a privilege. It really is.
Thanks for sharing in the story of this latest episode of Faith Radio's On the Road. For more on today's conversation and the full podcast archive of all our episodes, look for On the Road when you visit myfaithradio.com.
Thank you so much for listening. Programming like this is available through your support, and you can learn more about partnering financially at myfaithradio.com. We'd also love to hang out with you during the week on Facebook and on Twitter. Just search for On the Road with Ryan Thomas. Talk to you again soon.